Don't you like the honesty of the program? My name is Josh Hall, and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Through following the program to the best of my ability and the grace of God working in through my life, I refrained from drinking since August 13th, 1964, or ever since Moby Dick was a guppy. In August, if I don't drink and I don't die, that's how you get long-term sobriety, see? Yeah. Do you know that reminds me of what someone said? Alcoholics Anonymous is just like 2 million piss ants on a log floating down the Mississippi River, and every one of them think they're steering that log. But what they don't realize is, I am the captain. I have had a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I'm about to tell you, a lot of it is hearsay. And it, self will run riot is what it is. And then what I'm going to tell you is the grace of God working in a retired wino's life. And that's what I consider myself, a retired wino. And and there is no way. I was talking to my higher power, Gwen. And I was telling her the other night, there is absolutely no way that I can get from where I started to how I am today. Just no way under the sun. And so I'm going to try and tell you this. First of all, it pleases me very much to see a bunch of guys that I know who are just exactly like me. I've always felt different in my life. And in coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I still felt different. And as I stayed around here, I met some people like Jimmy Daniels, who's damn near as bad as I was, except he got caught more frequent. And we've known each other a little over nine years. And I've known Bill for almost 16, 17 years, and there's a bunch of people in this room that I've known for a long time. And I'm doing the things that is necessary to stay sober one day at a time. And that is going to meetings and reading the book and sponsoring newcomers. When you're in business for yourself, one of the neat things you can do is sponsor an individual that don't know nothing and he thinks he knows everything. And then you say, well, I need somebody to work for me. And so I put Kevin to work for me. The 1st of May, Kevin's worked for me a year, and he's got a little over a year's sobriety, and that's because I wouldn't let him drink on a job. He's also the reason that I could get away early and get over here to the conference, because I just told him, Kevin, the building, the tire store and all that crap is yours. Me and Gwen are splitting. And don't forget, you got to be here by 8 o'clock. And I told him, where did I tell you to go? The Holiday Inn. See, I made a mistake. I asked a drunk, my wife, for directions. And she got directions from another drunk, and he got directions from another drunk, and you know how that is, you know. Never mind the facts, I'm going to do it my way, you know. Anyway, I hate drunkologues, and so do you. But I'm going to give you mine anyway, simply because I don't like it. And the more I do this, the more I realize where I come from. People say I was born in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I believe I was hatched there, you know. And I was in AA probably 7 years before I could really find out how to express myself, how I felt. And I heard a woman at an AA meeting, she said, and they were talking about rebellion. She said, "I believe I left skid marks on my mother." And I jumped up out of the chair and I said, "That's it. I have been rebellious from get-go. I hated where I was born in Michigan. Anybody from Michigan here knows how bad that is." And the second step says be restored to sanity. In the dictionary's definition of restore is being returned to a former state. And I ain't going back to Michigan for nothing. Anyway. And I want you to know that this any drunkologue is hearsay. And it's not conference approved. Okay. Anyway. I was born and raised in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I have an older brother, a sister who's 2 years younger than me. She'll be 54, I guess, 55. And I had a younger brother who was 2 years younger than her. And I had my mother. And my dad was AWOL. He split and left her with four kids. And we were raised on ADC and welfare. And we got all that free food, you know, and we ate a lot of oatmeal that moved before and after it was cooked, you know. Had them little funny bugs in there, so we knew it was fresh. And you know, my brother was 2 years older than me, so I got his hand-me-downs. And then by the time I got through with them, there's my sister and then my younger brother. They were all wore out, so he got new clothes, too, from the Salvation Army and Volunteers of Americans, Little Sisters of the Poor and all that kind of junk. And I hated him. I hated my older brother because he got good clothes. And I hated my younger brother because he got good clothes. And I hated my sister because she got different clothes. And I cannot remember not hating these people. I just hated them from get-go. It seemed like I was always different. I couldn't do what my brother did because I wasn't old enough. They wouldn't let me do what my sister was thinking of doing because I was a little different. And I was too old to do what my young brother did. And so I tried to find my niche in life. And it seemed like I went from a little brat to a juvenile delinquent to whatever it was. Yeah, and most people in Alcoholics Anonymous can tell you when they had their first drink. And I am not one of those people. I think my mother took me off one bottle and put me on the other just to calm me down. I really do. Yeah. And I always felt different. And the worst day of my life, it just happened to be May the 1st, 1948. At this time, I had already been in the juvenile home several times. And sometimes the law took all four of us kids because my mother turned to prostitution, and they caught us. And then we'd go in the juvenile home, and then my mother would get the other three out and leave me in. And just the long term. Me and Gwen just celebrated our sixth wedding anniversary last Sunday, and that's the longest I have lived with any one person in my life. And you're going to hear about that later. And I've also had the longest permanent address I've ever had. The reason I'm going to tell you this will be obvious in a few minutes. On May the 1st, 1948, my older brother and younger brother and neighbor and me were crossing a railroad bridge walking on the railroad ties. And me and my younger brother were in the back there. And my younger brother, who was 10 years old, fell through the railroad ties into the water that was swollen in the spring rains in the Grand River. And I yelled at my older brother, "Chuck, Walter fell in. And my older brother run to the end of the bridge and underneath the buildings and dove in the water and tried to save him. My neighbor kid run back home yelling, "He killed him, he killed him." And I stood on the bridge and I yelled, "Both you sons of bitches drown. Drown, damn you, drown." And a man a quarter of a mile away heard me. And he looked in the water and he saw my older brother. And I threw a life preserver in there. And they saved my older brother. And they never found the body of my 10-year-old brother. From that moment on, when they printed that in the Grand Rapids Press, I was known as a brother killer. The cops grilled me for hours, wanting to know why I did it. And there's only two entities in this whole world who knew I didn't do it. One of them was God, and the other was me. And God didn't see fit to tell these people that I didn't do it. And I finally just told them, prove it. Just prove it. I don't care. I had already been arrested 3 or 4 times by this time I was 13 years old for being drunk in public. I had learned how to get drunk out of grocery stores real early. I drank vanilla extract, rubbing alcohol with grapefruit juice. There's just a lot of things in a grocery store you can drink to get drunk. On July 17, 1948, on my 14th birthday, my mother woke me with a razor strap. And her exact words were, "Get out of here, you brother killer. I don't have to take care of you no longer." And I took the razor strap away from her, and I beat her with it until I thought I killed her. And then I stole her money. And then I run to the Grand Rapids City dump, and I found 4 other winos there. And we proceeded to live in the Grand Rapids City dump for the next 3 years. It is amazing to me how much stuff people throw away that ferments. We got all we wanted to drink out of the city dump. We got all our clothes. We got all our needs right in the city dump. We didn't leave it very often. I'm going to tell you, my favorite period of time at that time was Halloween, because they get those pumpkins, and they threw away them pumpkins, and they were almost whole, you know, when they threw them away. And I used to tell what you could do with them, and then a guy went out and got drunk and tried it with one, and he was in Parkland for about 7 days, so I don't tell no more. But you can do some things with a pumpkin that... You can sit there and watch it, and that lid will start bobbling up and down like that, and that white foam will come over the side, and it really tastes like hell. But buildings would disappear before your very eyes. It was just wonderful stuff, and I really enjoyed it. We periodically had to have yeast and sugar and stuff like that people wouldn't throw away, so we had to get out and steal, but... That was just petty stuff. But 2 days before my 17th birthday, I got caught by the law for theft over $50. And I hadn't been home in my homes since that July 17th, 1948. And I used to say I never had any choices in my life. But they caught me and they gave me a wonderful choice. First one I remember I had. They said, "Well, seeing as though you got all this bad deal on your record already, we got a deal for you." You know how the deals go, Jimmy. And they said, "You can either join the army or we'll send you to prison." I wish I'd have went to prison. Bad choice. I still wish I'd have went to prison. Jesus. Anyway, I served 3 years and 22 days in the United States Army and made PFC one day. I might have held on to that, except I was AWOL at the time. in Korea, when I went to Korea, it's the first place in my life that I ever functioned that I felt good about. They made me a sniper because nobody wanted to have anything to do with me, and the term of a sniper was very, you know, so they made me a sniper because I was expendable. I'd like to tell you the terms of how my mother signed my enlistment papers with the provision that I make her my beneficiary, which I did. In the 11 months and 13 days that I was in Korea, I received three letters, all from my mother, all addressed to the Red Cross, wanting to know if she inherited $10,000. And I had to write her back, and I wrote, "Not yet, you bitch, Josh." And that satisfied that deal. But my job in the military was every other night, they give me 7 bullets, that's it. Every other night, I'm supposed to kill 4 people and wound 3. Just harass the enemy. Some nights I killed my mother and father and sister and brother and just wounded my aunts and uncles. Some nights I would just kill my aunts and uncles, but always my mother. See, I never missed her every other night. I just got her good. And then they put me back to the States and they took away my bullets. And they wouldn't let me shoot nobody no more. And I had hell with that. And then they sent me to Jackson, South Carolina, where I got introduced to the South's 2 secret weapons, and I'll never understand why they never won the war. It's called moonshine and chiggers. I could win that war with those 2 weapons and 6 Al-Anons. And I'd have my sponsor today, Fred Leedham. I got to get rid of the rest of this real quick. Yeah, and when I got my discharge, my company commander took me into Columbus, Georgia. And I don't want to tell you what happened in Georgia. That's the pits. I ain't been back there either. But he put me on the first train leaving Georgia. Where's those people from Alabama? I want to say I spent some time in Phoenix City in their finest establishment where you see the striped sunrises. Alcoholics Anonymous never changes. Give a wine old water. That's why Jesus C. is my hero. Anybody can turn water to wine is my kind of guy. I saw you shake your head. Anyway, he put me on a first train leaving Georgia, and they sent me to Baltimore, Maryland. And I was in Baltimore, Maryland for 5 months when the state police put me on a Greyhound bus and sent me to Michigan to the scene of the crime. And I arrived in Michigan not knowing where any of my relatives were, but it didn't take me long to find them. I'm not going to be one of them people who tell you how much they drank every day because I had blackouts and don't know. I'm not one of the people who tell you how many times I've been arrested because I don't know. I'm not privileged to that information. I drank some canned heat, and 4 days later, they're leaving me in jail, and I thought they were putting me in. You know, it was just terrible. In the next 7 years, some of you know about Napoleon Hill. He said, anything the mind of man can conceive and believe, he can achieve. My mind said, get even, and I achieved it because I believed I could. And I did. And I got even with my mother, father, sister and brother, and aunts and uncles. I have 15. At that time, I had 15 living relatives. It just seemed that I just hated them so bad. I just couldn't stand it. Finally, my family is not a close-knit family. My brother speaks to my father, my sister speaks to my mother, and my mother don't speak to very many others, you know, and they don't socialize a lot. However, on October the 22nd of 1960, they were in harmony and with a definite purpose, and that was to put Joshua for the criminally insane. And I found myself in a courtroom with these people, with my 15 relatives on one side, and me and a court-appointed attorney, not Jason, but a court-appointed. That's a plug. I love my mommy. You can tell I did. What these people did was get up there and tell about this terrorist in their life who did things to them drunk and sober, and they could never tell which. And I sat there and listened to them because I'd been in jail for about 10, 15 days. Which reminds me of that joke, you know, the judge said, "You've been brought here for drinking." And I said, "It's about time. I've been locked up 15 days, you know that." I can tell you what kind of wino I was, too. That cop said to this wino, did you mess your pants? And I said, "No." And he said, "My God, I can smell you." And I said, "I thought you meant today, you know." And one time I said yes, and he said, "You ought to be ashamed of yourself. What are you going to do about it?" I said, "I don't know. I ain't finished yet." You know, and they would put me in these damn hospitals, and they would doctor these wine sores, and what I needed was a drink of alcohol. Wine. Anyway, they were talking about what I did. I sat there and just pounded that table. And I saw where I had just about did what I wanted to them. But evidently, I didn't go quite far enough because they escaped, you know? And the judge thought I was in remorse. And he stopped the proceedings, and he said, here's the second choice that I know of. The judge said, "What I hear here is someone not who is criminally insane, but somebody who has a severe drinking problem." And my family in unison said no. And I said yes. I wish I'd have said no. Little did I know what I was getting into. They got this guy who used to be an advanced ticket agent for the Mills Brothers Circus, and his name was Larry Lawrence. What I'm fixing to tell you is the truth. I don't care about any. If you believe anything else I tell you, I want you to know about this. Larry Lawrence come to that courtroom because that judge called him. And he said to me, "Larry, have I got one for you this time?" And Larry says, "Where is he?" And he said, "Right there." And they had me in that little cell. And he looked at me and he said, "Do you have a drinking problem?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I'll take him." I was 27 years old. And this judge put me in the custody of Larry Lawrence, who had 13 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, and took responsibility for me for 1 year. Larry Lawrence had to be out of his ever-loving mind and had never read the big book. I would not take on the responsibility of anybody in this room for 3 days, let alone for a year. And he tried to take me to Alcoholics Anonymous. He lost a lot of weight. He lost what serenity he had. He said, "Where do you live?" And we were in Grand Rapids. And I said, "I live on Woodard Avenue in Detroit." And he said, "Oh, my God." And he drove me to Detroit, to Woodard Avenue. I don't know if any of you know about Woodard Avenue in Detroit, where Woodard Avenue and Grand River come together. But it's kind of like South Dallas. You know, it's just not your fine neighborhood. And we went up to the third floor of this facility that had a room over. Oh, the plumbing weren't hooked up, but that don't matter. And he said, "My God, do you live here?" And I said, "Yeah, this is where I live." It was $7.50 for every 2 weeks. Lived in them, ancient Jew. And he paid for 2 more weeks. And he tried to get me to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we walked into rooms, and people would say, "Glad you're here." And I look at him and say, "Man, I don't belong. I'm different. I hate you." And people just go back off their way. I got to looking through my cabinet. First of all, I got to tell you something. My brother has 66 stitches from here to here where I got him with a wine bottle. And he talks funny. My dad has one tooth left in his mouth right here. It's almost like a badge of honor. I didn't get it. I got the rest, but I didn't get that. Him and my brother got all of mine several times. And they were justified in doing it, you know, but I didn't think so at the time. Anyway, I couldn't stand sobriety. I didn't want no part of it. I didn't want to live, let alone live sober. My God, what a deal. And I looked in my cabinet, and I saw some stuff called HEAT, H-E-E-T. And it said 43% alcohol on it. In the icebox, or this thing that didn't work, was about that much orange juice. I don't know where it come from, probably the last wino to live there. But I scraped the mold off of that. And I took this dauber and I put this bottle to my mouth. And I swear to you, I thought my lips had blistered. So I took some crackers and mixed it in with this orange juice and put the rest of that bottle in there. And I took a swallow. And I swear to God, I thought my dentures went. And so I just took them out and threw them. And I took that nasty old shirt I had and squeezed the rest of it through there. And I drank that. 10 days later, that was on the 28th, before Christmas. Anyway, I woke up at Sparrow Hospital in Lansing, Michigan on the 8th day of January in a straitjacket. That's the third straitjacket I've been in my life. And this doctor said to me, "Welcome back. We thought we had lost you." And I didn't know I'd been any place. And then they released me. And I'll tell you where I live. I live within 4 blocks of any Greyhound bus station in the United States. That's where I live. I just couldn't hack sobriety. It was just all there is to it. So I'm not supposed to be in any area where my mother is. So I went in this drugstore in Grand Rapids, Michigan to get some bay rum. And as I'm walking down this aisle, my mother's walking down this aisle. And she screamed and she fainted. And I grabbed her purse and I run. But I already had my bay rum, so I run with that too. And I run down to the Greyhound bus depot, and I got the first bus leaving Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was headed for Dallas, Texas. 2 minutes later, I'd been in High Point, North Carolina, and I hit for Dallas, Texas. And I arrived in Dallas, Texas, not knowing a soul. And everybody looking at everybody else suspiciously because it was after Kennedy got shot. And anyway, I arrived off here, and I was still in the same clothes I was then. And I went to a drugstore, and I got me some bay rum and some rubbing alcohol and something to get by on. And I wound up out at Suburban Club in Dallas, Texas. And I was met at the door. I don't know what would be equivalent to Suburban Club here in Waco, but it's where they got all them new cars outside, and then people all own their own businesses, you know. And this guy stopped me and said, "Well, where the hell are you going?" And I said, "Is this AA?" And he said, "My God, you don't want to quit, do you?" Said, "You got any money?" I said, "No." He gave me $6 and I split. When you're good, when you find a live place like that, when you run out of money, you go back. So I went back. I'm still in the same clothes. And another guy met me and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, "Is this AA?" And he said, "What?" And I said, "Is this AA?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "When is the last time you ate?" I said, "Ate hell, you know. I need some more money." I said, "I don't know." So he gave me $4 and I split. August 13th, 1964, 4 days later, in the same clothes, I walked back out to Suburban Club. This guy met me at the door. And I said, "Is this AA?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I want to quit drinking." He said, "Come on in. I can save all of you a bunch of misery. The secret password in Alcoholics Anonymous is, I want to quit drinking. Then no matter what you look like, smell like, act like, or feel like, you're welcome." And they took me in, and this guy named Gordon Allen, who moved up to St. Louis, Missouri, and I've never seen him since, said to me, he said, "My God, you need help." And I said, "Yes, I do." And he took me out to Parkland, and Parkland gave me some stuff to help me through that. He took me down to a store, and he got me some clothes. He took me to the Oak Lawn Inn Hotel and asked him if they had a room in the basement, and said he'll clean up anything. And they gave me a room in the basement, and I want to talk to you about a lie you Texans tell. They have a lot of big, black, dark brown bugs like this that you call water bugs. Those are cockroaches. But they didn't bother me so much when I realized that they were real. Because I've seen a lot of things that weren't real. Then Gordon Allen, about 4 days later, took me to the Lucas B&B restaurant on Oak Lawn and got me a job using one of my various talents, washing dishes. What I've told you so far up to this point here, I got to tell you this. There is no alcoholism on either side of my family. None. My brother and sisters are married, got kids, work, pay taxes, all that kind of stuff. We can trace it back to Noah. And my dysfunctional family started with God and his first two kids. You know, that's my dysfunctional family. But outside of all that, I just want you to know that there's no alcoholism on any side of my family that I know of. But that, up to now, this is what happened, what it was like. What happened next is probably the greatest lesson on the loopholes of the law. I was mentally incapable of making a rational decision outside of this. On August 13th, 1964, I made a deal with me, not with Alcoholics Anonymous and not with the people of Suburban, but the deal with me, that I am going to go to any lengths to stay sober if I have to lose what little left of my mind, if I have to spend it in prison somewhere or an insane asylum. I am not going to do this to me no more. It is not them doing it to me. It was me. That's what I knew on August 13th, 1964. And it wasn't my worst drunk, but I knew that. Those people at Suburban, after 2 months, showed me where Town North Club was. And it was on Inwood Road. And right there is where I met the people who raised me. I met my sponsor, who was Hal Newman. Hal Newman became my sponsor for two very good reasons. Number one, he had a 1.58 diamond ring and told everybody it was a perfect diamond and that it was worth a lot of money. The second reason, he had a lot of cigarettes, and he lit every one of them with a gold Dunhill lighter. And I thought, if he was my sponsor when he died, he would leave me that diamond ring and that Dunhill lighter, and I could convert those two into wine, and if AA didn't work, I could drink myself to death. You got to have a reason to get a sponsor. I said to him after meeting him 10 days, I said, "Hal, how am I doing?" He said, "Did you take a bath today?" I don't know how some of you are, but I know Jimmy knows, because I saw him. And I saw Kevin much at. But at 10 days sobriety, who gives a damn about a bath? I got ego claws inside my stomach trying to get out, and I can't, and I'm trying to cope with those things. And he, a dummy, asked me if I took a bath. And I told him, yes, I took a bath. He said, "What kind of soap you use?" I said, "That's kind of sitting in little bars like that in the basement of that damn motel I'm staying at." And he said, "It ain't working." And this rich sponsor reached in his pocket and brought out one of these samples. And I do not sell underarm deodorant. Don't sell it. He said, "You see this? This is green Minin underarm deodorant. Use it." I said, "What?" He said, "Use it." I said, "How? There's very few deodorants that you can chew or eat or drink, you know. I ain't never used no deodorant." He said, "Use this." I said, "My God." And he said, "Use this." And he brought out one of them little bars of gold dial soap. And he said, "Use this. This is my rich sponsor, right? Give me samples." And he said, "One other thing I'd like to caution you about." And I said, "What's that?" "Do not take money out of the coffee kitty." We need to tell people that. I needed it worse than they did. They had a whole can full, you know. He said, "Another thing. Those books are for sale. You don't steal them." And I said, "Well, I never stole a book." He said, "Yes, you did. You got a big book and a 12 and 12. Said, "When?" He said, "I know when you got them because I went back and paid for them myself." And I said, "Good to have a sponsor like you." Alcoholics Anonymous tells you somewhere that you don't have to change anything, just everything. Right? That's not too hard. When you're rotten to the core, you do 180 degrees and you're facing rotten again. It's not hard. Change everything. He said, "We'd like you to be self-supporting through your own contributions." Oh, what a concept. Jesus Christ. He said, "I want you to go back to school." He said, "I want you to listen when they're talking in AA meetings on step 1, 2, and 3. When they go past 3, you say pass. You don't speak." Now, I was never married prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. There weren't too many winettes looking for winos. Just wasn't. And then I got this girl. I met this girl. I was working at Hart Furniture Company and delivered and made a date with her like that. And she was smarter than I was and wilder. And I want you to know I was only 30 years old, you know. And she's talking about going to bed, you know. And my sex life was number 8 on my priority list, right below taking a bath. You know what I'm saying? I'll tell you, it was like I was trying to, kind of like shooting pool with a rope. You knew what the game was, but you didn't know quite how it's going to work out, you know? Anyway, I wish they wrote a book about Alcoholics Anonymous and included some of these little guidelines in there, how to have sex sober. Now it's how to have it safe, you know? I wish they had said sober, you know? How to eat sober. That was a trick. I had many women just get up and leave the table. It was pitiful. Yeah, is what it was. Yeah. And sometimes I still embarrass Gwen, you know. But That's all right. But I want to tell you one of the fallacies of Alcoholics Anonymous in that time. When we went to meetings, we went Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Monday and Friday, they had discussion meetings. Or they had a speaker meeting on Friday night and Monday night. And they had a beginner's meeting where the guy got up and talked. And on Wednesday, they had somebody do the steps from the podium, which is an assumption that alcoholics can listen and hear and understand all at the same time, you know. But as long as I was going to meetings Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and not drinking, I thought I was getting well. That big book I stole, I never busted the cover of it. Never. Hal Newman told me, he said, in order for you to stay sober, besides not drinking, you have to be grateful for something. And I said, let's see. If I never drink again, that means I never have to go to jail again, never have to eat squash, and never have to go back to Michigan. And I'm telling you today, as I stand here, 26 and some odd months later, I have not been in jail. I have not eaten squash, and I damn sure haven't went back to Michigan. Now, those things, I want you to know, I am still grateful for today. They're on my gratitude list. And good Lord willing, I'm going to go to my grave not eating squash or go to jail or go to Michigan. And I'm going to die sober and tell him thank you for if nothing else for that. You know, I went back to school, and I got a GED, and I got married, then I got divorced, then I got married, and 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 got divorced. And then I got married and got divorced. And then I got married and got divorced. And not one of those times did I ever get married with the idea of getting a divorce. Never. Sometime after my 10th or 11th year of being absolutely dry like a fire hazard, I had to run away from home and go to Houston, Texas, and go to an outpatient therapy deal to get past some of these things I couldn't get in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was in this thing four nights a week. I moved down there to Houston. And while I was in that thing there, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous clicked in. And this guy who was leading this therapy said something about God as you understand him. And I said, that's a lie. And he said, what? And I said, that's a lie. And he said, well, what do you think about God? And I told him. I said, God is the greatest fixer and mixer that ever was. And he does not cause, but he allows. And he says, you don't need therapy no more. And on that day, I came to believe in what I believe in. God is understanding. To this day, my concept of God has not changed. To this day, my faith in God has not increased or decreased one iota. To this day, my belief and trust in God has not changed one iota. And I found it on page 53 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. God is. That's the law. That's the universal law. God is. He's everything or he's nothing. What was our choice to be? My choice, he is. And he's everything. That's the law. The members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wish Barbara Davis was here. Barbara Davis, Virginia Padgett, and Nancy Grinnan were the first three women who I knew loved me unconditionally. I remember Barbara telling a lot of people, leave him alone. As long as he ain't drinking, he's getting better, and we'll love him like he is. Leave him alone. They're the three oldest Al-Anons in the city of Dallas, Texas. And they are some kind of women. And they loved me, and I hated them for it. Hated them. Told them. Barbara's fat and ugly. Told her that. She said, I love you anyway. I went back from Houston because Shep Grinnan called me and he said, get your butt back up here to Dallas where the people who raised you are. And I went back to Dallas. Then I started working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I went out to Duncanville and got a job in Cedar Hill. And I lived by myself. And that's where I met Jason. And he knew a couple of my wives. Yeah. Every alcoholic like me needs a lawyer. And about now, I'm going to tell you the most exciting thing in it. And it's called the grace of God. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I discovered that I am one of God's kids. No better, no worse. I'm one of his kids. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has been allowing me to fulfill the conditions of the law, which are the first two big steps he told us to do. Love you one another, you know. And do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And never forget where you come from. And give freely of what you find, you know, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And about this time, I met Gwen Hall, my wife. The book says we have to have a degree of honesty, but I'm a deviate from that for a minute. I am going to tell you the gut level truth. When Gwen told her sponsor that she was going to a dance with me, her sponsor said, go ahead, you can go to dance with him, just that you ain't going to marry him. And we started going together. And I might get this a little wrong, but basically it's the same. We were coming to Whitney to go fishing at her daughter and son-in-law's house. And we drove in the wrong driveway. Made a wrong turn somehow and got in this driveway. And this house was empty. And it was trashed. And it was on the most beautiful spot you've ever seen in your life. We couldn't get in the house. And we looked around the outside of that house, and I said, Gwen, let's me and you can get married, and let's buy this place. I can get it on my GI Bill. I can get it. Gwen said she was walking behind me and almost crapped right there. You know. Up to this time, I have had various degrees of honesty in my sobriety. But I made a commitment to my wife, Gwen, because her sponsor fired her when she said that she was going to marry me. Her friends at Town North said, you're crazy. And it's just like we put a boxing ring in the middle of Town North. And me and her crawled up in that ring. And the ones who cared and loved us jumped in the ring with us. And a lot of them are in this room today. And I knew without a shadow of a doubt that besides Barbara Davis, Virginia Padgett, and Nancy Greenan, that here was a woman who loved me up, down, over, under, around, and through. Didn't make no difference. She loved me. I want my wife staying. Gwen? And we turned that trashed out house into a pretty little home. And a lot of people in this room have been there. You can walk down my... I see one of my, a couple of my fishing partners back there. And you can walk 100 feet out my back door, or our back door, and go down like this. My neighbor has 96 steps down to the water in this little cove. And it is the most beautiful sight you've ever seen in your life. It's the most peaceful, and sometimes I let other fishermen go in that cove, but it's mine. We got married in Shula Point, which is right in Laguna Park, at Gwen's daughter's home. Shortly after that, I got injured, and I had to have my neck operated on twice in a period of about 14 months, and I couldn't work. Then I got a settlement from that there, and Gwen paid half of that house, and I paid half, and our home is paid for. And then God in his infinite wisdom or sense of humor, whichever, put me in the tire business in Whitney, Texas. Shortly after that, I made Gwen the hubcap queen of Hill County. I got into an obsession of hubcaps, and at one time I had over 8,000. Now I only got about 7,300. And that's where me and Kevin work today, at Whitney Tire Company. And we started it with 600 tires, period. Now they call me the Fred Sanford of Whitney. Well, you got a flea market that's got more nuts and bolts in it, including the people that run it, you know. Yeah, and we got this tire business in, and it, about the 10th of the month, Gwen does this trial balance thing, you know, something. And she said to me, she said, "Is God going to leave us broke all our lives?" And from where I told you I come from, all right, I want to tell you where we live. And you see if I'm broke. I have a 3-bedroom house with 2 bathrooms, inside plumbing that works. In the front of my house is a hot tub that Doris and Sauce been in. And but Gwen was there too, so it's all right. Me and Kevin have a little 10-foot rowboat with a 7-horsepower motor that we play around in the cove, and he got a ticket in because it wasn't registered. Details. I have never missed a meal. I cannot tell you how many people love me, men and women, love me. Including Cricket and my comrade there with you. They ever call you Mrs. Cricket? I know, I just never. Chuck, I'm sorry. But I have men like Bill and Fred and Jim. I don't want to pay out too many, but Jimmy Daniels, me and him been instant friends for years. But I've been an alcoholic. Oh, yeah, I don't know. Rex, I'm sorry, Rex. We've been friends for years, too, and a bunch of the others. But I cannot tell you how important that is to me. I have wealth that is measured in God's terms and not man's terms. I have absolutely no fears except for the one that my instinct to self-destruct will override my instinct to live. That's the only fear I got. You see, I got something here that I found the other day that I saw years ago and that I've been trying to pass on to people that I know. I get all kinds of crap like this because I don't know what I'm doing with it. But it goes like this. I do not operate on my own limited resources. I do not operate on AA's limited resources. I do not operate on my own spiritual resources. Instead, what I do is what the book says. It says for me to turn my feelings and my thinking over to the care of the God that I understand inside. Then it's my business to do His business. And it's His business to take care of me. Chuck Chamberlain in a new pair of glasses. I read it and it slapped me right in the head. You know the book says about humility. We need more of this precious quantity. Al-Anon book. It says humility is surrendering to God's will. Fred got me in Al-Anon. I hated Al-Anon. What the hell? They go out and have a slip. What happens? I have a slip. I die. What happens when they have a slip? Fred taught me that. But what Al-Anon has taught me is to look at it from a different point of view. I absolutely love my wife. I treasure her. She's my business partner. She's my lover. My best friend. most precious gift sobriety could ever give anybody. I stand before you a gentleman, not a wino. I have not had contact with any member of my family in over 30 years, except 11 years later when I finally become willing to make amends. $119 to find out if they're living or dead. They were all living, damn it. I can tell you what they told me. Go ye forth and multiply alone and stay in Texas. We don't want you. Stay dead. It's all right. That was my deal. I had to do it for me, not for them. And it was their choice. But you see, I have brothers and sisters in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have people who have been in Alcoholics Anonymous who are older than I am to go for advice. I have a sponsor that I can sit down and talk to him about anything. Don't care what it is. About any crazy quirk I got up in my head. Do not. I know this. And that makes me a wealthy man. I'm sorry I went over a little bit. I think I went over a little bit. But I don't wear a wristwatch. Because I'm on God's time. I don't need one. All I need to tell you is this. Every morning, I say, I can't, he can't, I'm going to let him. And I go through the day, and what happens, happens. That's how he's fixing me on a daily basis. At night when I go to bed, I say thank you, and I meditate and go to sleep. That's how I go to sleep. I know how to meditate. I went and learned. And then I left that church because I didn't need it. But I learned how to meditate. And what happens is this. When I do step 10 at night, I can say, I love you. Because I am becoming my own best friend. Constructive criticism. When I do step 11, I can look at y'all and I can say, I love God. I absolutely love God. And W.C. Fields. And I can do step 12. And that says to me that I can look at all of you. And I can say to you from the bottom of my heart and as honest as I know how, I love you. Thank you very much.